I would note, too, and we're going to get into this in a much bigger way when we have time, when I do the archive show about the O.J. Simpson murder case, if in fact, Mark Fuhrman was involved in some way in planting evidence against O.J. Simpson, I personally doubt that he would have done this on his own. I think that if Fuhrman was, as alleged, involved in planting evidence on O.J. Simpson, he would have done so as part of an organization and at the direction of superiors. One of the many questions I have about the O.J. Simpson murder case is the possibility of a deliberately blown defense, as we have seen in previous national security-connected cases, and I suspect that there is at least a possibility that the O.J. Simpson case may be such a case. One of the things that I find frankly incredible is that O.J. Simpson's defense team did not challenge Judge Ito as being the judge to hear the case, because Judge Ito appears to me, frankly, to have a profound conflict of interest. As we have seen, the legal debate in the O.J. Simpson case is going to turn to a considerable extent around allegations of police misconduct, deliberate police misconduct of a felonious nature. And obviously there are allegations of not only racism on the part of Mark Fuhrman, but of Nazi affiliations on the part of Mark Fuhrman. The investigation into the veracity of those allegations will obviously be impeded by the judge's decision, Judge Ito's decision, not to grant the Simpson defense team access to Mark Fuhrman's police and military records. One of the things that I find frankly incredible is that the shocking that the O.J. Simpson defense team did not challenge Judge Ito and demand a different judge. The reason for that is exemplified in the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, July 23rd of 1994. This is an article by William Carlson, again, C-A-R-L-S-E-N, of the Chronicle, Dateline L.A., headlined O.J. Plea, 100% Not Guilty. Skipping down, about Judge Ito, we find, pointing out that Ito is married to a Los Angeles police captain in the Bunko forgery unit, Mills asked both sides whether they had any objection to Ito serving as trial judge. Both Robert Shapiro, Simpson's lead counsel, and prosecutor Marcia Clark answered that they found Ito, quote, acceptable, unquote. And skipping down, in a recent interview with a local legal newspaper, Ito said that he met his wife, Captain Margaret York, quote, at a homicide scene looking over a dead body, unquote. York, then a homicide detective, is now the highest-ranking woman in the department. Well, again, in a case where allegations of deliberate and felonious police misconduct are going to be central to the legal debate, having a judge married to the highest-ranking female member of the Los Angeles Police Department appears to me to be a conflict of interest, if ever there was one. Another thing I find very strange about the O.J. Simpson case concerns the bungling, if in fact that's what it is, by the coroner's department. We will get into this at greater length when I do the archive show about the O.J. Simpson murder case, but note the following from the Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, August 8th of 1994. AP story, Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, Defense Pursues Ice Cream Clue in Simpson Case. It reads in part, Nicole Brown Simpson, her two children, and a young man in a suit stopped in for ice cream the night she and Ron Goldman were killed, the manager of a Ben & Jerry's said yesterday. Bill Chang said he did not believe the man was Goldman. Skipping down, prosecutors have said Nicole Simpson and Goldman were killed between 10:15 p.m. and 11 p.m. on June 12th, but police found a cup of ice cream, much of it still frozen, near the bodies sometime after 12:10 a.m. on June 13th, the sources told the magazine. The timing of the discovery would suggest that Simpson and Goldman were alive after 11 p.m. because the ice cream would have melted in the 60-degree heat, the magazine reported. Now note the following from the San Francisco Examiner of Thursday, July 21st of 1994. Article by Michael Fleeman, F-L-E-E-M-A-N of the AP, also Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, Coroner, Simpson Evidence Handled Poorly. It reads in part, The coroner's office has identified 16 instances of mishandled evidence in the O.J. Simpson case, which sources say include a bile sample labeled as urine and the possibility that Nicole Brown Simpson's bloody dress was contaminated by dangling in a communal drip pan. Skipping down, according to interviews with coroner's employees, the problems include leaving the bodies of Nicole Simpson and Ronald Goldman in unmarked crypts, improperly removing and storing the victim's personal belongings, and sending a less experienced morgue worker to pick up the bodies at the crime scene. Skipping down, Deputy Medical Examiner Irwin Goldwyn said Nicole Simpson's stomach contents had been discarded, while Goldman's had inexplicably been saved. Goldman admitted he hadn't adequately investigated whether a knife such as one Simpson allegedly bought could have created the fatal wounds. Under cross-examination by defense attorney Robert Shapiro, Golden further revealed that coroner's investigators hadn't even seen the bodies for more than 10 hours after they were discovered, and that the lapse precluded determining either a precise time of death or who died first. A victim's time of death is most accurately determined by the drop in normal body temperature. I would also note that among the factors to determine the time of death are the gastric contents of the victim, because that determines, obviously, the degree of digestion also helps to determine the time of death. Well, the fact that the bodies were not examined until 10 hours after the murder is strange. The discarding of the contents of Nicole Simpson's stomach, in light of the critical nature of the ice cream evidence, for lack of a better term, is also, frankly, to my way of thinking, very, very, very suspicious. Again, there's an old saying in the clandestine services, give us the coroner, we'll control the city. I have a healthy respect for human stupidity and incompetence. However, I really wonder whether all of those mistakes, quote-unquote, including failing to examine the bodies for 10 hours. By the way, the coroner's office blames the delay on the police and the discarding of Nicole Simpson's stomach. I wonder if that's really coincidence. Last item I'm going to touch on, and bear in mind that the bodies of Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson, and Ron Goldman were kept in unlocked crypts. And again, there are allegations of deliberate police misconduct. They have yet to be proved, as I've said before. From the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, July 1st of 1994, the following article, also by William Carlson of the Chronicle, Dateline, Los Angeles, headline, dramatic early testimony, subheaded, witness says he sold knife to Simpson. Skipping down, autopsy reports indicate that Nicole Brown Simpson and Goldman were savagely slashed to death outside her condominium. Knife store salesman Jose Camacho testified that 2 days after the killings, Los Angeles police detectives came to the downtown store where he works and purchased a single-edge retractable knife nearly identical to the knife he sold to the former football star. Why did they do that? Last article, and I wonder whether perhaps there is an attempt to set up O.J. Simpson, and this is by no way a statement I'm making, but rather a question I'm asking. Note that the bodies of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson were kept in unlocked crypts. They were accessible to those who would want to plant evidence. That's all we have time for this evening. We're going to finish up the last couple of items that had been intended for tonight's broadcast next week. So that concludes the One Step Beyond broadcast for this evening. And it has been a long evening. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening, and good night.
Now, all of our archive broadcast shows are on permanent file with a tape duplication company. The name of that company is Archives on Audio. That's Archives on Audio. They're located at P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. 415-346-1840. I should also mention that neither myself nor this station makes any money off of this announcement. This is FYI. This is Dave Emery thanking all the listeners for their contributions and encouraging them to tune in again to the next broadcast. Until then, take care.